History interview with Mr. Leon McGinnis, conducted by Kerry Huggins on the 5th day of February in 1995. First thing I'm going to ask you, I was wondering if you would tell me a little about yourself and your family, like before you were in World War II, and a few things about your family now, if you would like.
Well, my family moved to Springville in 1910. I was born down here at the corner of Jen Foreman Street. And the year after I was born, Papa finished this house, and we lived here, except for the time that I was in the service and the time that we were at the farm, ever since. Now, I finished school at Springville in 1930, 64 years ago. And I finished school at a time when there was a horrific depression going on. So I knew, like most families, knew considerable about poverty and deprivation and lack of education and all of this sort of thing. When you have little, what little you have becomes extremely valuable to you. That is one of the reasons why your times of great patriotism usually fall in bad times. The Revolutionary War was a result of poverty. The French Revolution was a result of extreme poverty and abuse of the lower classes of people. And so in 1942, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, I had just only recently got a decent job, and I was not married at the time, and so I decided that what I had was worth defending. Not being a particularly brave man, I decided that I better get in that thing.
How old were you when you went to the war? 28
years old.
So the reason you decided to go to the war was because of you felt like that this country was worth defending.
That is right.
And what were your feelings about going? Were you excited or were you afraid?
Absolutely petrified. And too excited. It's new. You never know how you're going to react. And you're going to go into a war, and there's nobody there that has been in one before. And now, like I say, I was 28 years old. And actually, that is rather old for a soldier. And I happened to score extremely high on mathematical aptitude, so they decided that they were going to make an artilleryman out of me. And 6 months after I got in, they pinned a gold bar on my collar and said, "Boy, you're an artilleryman, go get them."
Where were you at?
I was in the war that I fought was in Europe, in Germany. France and Germany, and Austria and Czechoslovakia. And took my training at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and various forts all over the southeast. The Army used the South to train, and the first place they got a lot of ignorant rednecks as volunteers. The great majority of U.S. volunteers were a product of the Southeast. These were men who were two, three generations away from the Civil War, which was the only time that this country had been occupied. And there was some genetic memory of what would happen if when you lose a war. I had an exemption. My father was ill, and my mother could not support herself. And I was the support of the family, but I managed to get in. And the allowance, the whole $50 a month that we made then, was enough for them to live on because they owned this house.
Is that the money you got while you were in the war? Or is that what
you was the money that I got to begin with. That's private pay. As soon as I got to be a first lieutenant, I got $150 a month. I found an income tax return not long ago, and I was utterly amazed to see that I was paying income taxes on a whole $1,800 a year. It's a little bit strange, you know. But the war in Europe, we were the first unit that sailed from the United States and landed directly in France without stopping. We got there a matter of 3 weeks after D-Day at Normandy. And we got there in time to go across France, south of Paris, and going to Alsace-Lorraine. And it was a miserable fall. It rained all the time. And the Germans were taking a terrible shellacking from air power and also from artillery. We were good at artillery. It's hard to imagine when you see the improvements that they've made on it. It's hard to imagine how devastatingly accurate we were. We used liaison planes, little canvas-covered plane made out of light wood. As long as we could get our plane in the air while the Germans dare not move because we'd hit them. I know that one time the S3, that's the operations officer, flagged me down, pulled me off the road, and he said that a German Tiger Royal tank was holding up the infantry, and they had a plane up that could spot it, and there was a man, Lindgren, was an observer. He was a bat on the ground, but get him in the air, and usually the second round, he'd be on target. And he hit that German Tiger Royal thing. It was larger than our Sherman thing, and it had a better artillery piece on it than our Sherman thing did. And he hit it 21 times. And the next morning, they had towed it away. So apparently we didn't utterly destroy it. And the fall campaign was rather ghastly. And on the 15th of December, we had already fought our way into the edge of Germany, and they pulled us back into Metz, and they replaced us with the 106th Infantry Division. It had a shoulder patch with a lion's head, and they were very green outfit. They made up cadre units, they would call it. They would pick out people that they were going to use to make larger units with. They did not have very good officers. I didn't think they did have. And they spread them over an impossibly wide front. And then there's where the Germans, commanded by Rommelstedt, attacked right after we left out of there. And we stayed in Metz 3 days, where we got replacements for our vehicles. And then we had lost. And then we got the call to go north, because the Germans had attacked Bastogne. They intended to divide the Allies on the north side and on the south side, and then some pattern counterattack. And he made the statement that Rumsfeld had put his neck in the meat ground and they were going to turn the crank. And of course we did. I never thought too much at the time. I was an executive officer. The executive officer is the housekeeper. I took care of Senator Mamayo. A letter did not go out without I read it and signed that I had read it.
So all those love letters and everything you got to
read. The entire work. If anybody had a problem, was sick, had to know about it. I had to pick a place for each gun to go. I had to pick a place for the kitchen to go, for the motors, the vehicles to be stored. And it was worse than being married to two women at the same time. But for some reason or other, because I was at least 10 years older than anybody else, they sort of adopted me for a grandpa, I was the only executive officer in the whole battalion. A battalion of artillery is composed of three batteries of four howitzers each, and I was the only one that stayed in the same unit from the beginning to the end of the war. The rest of them have changed over, and I was used as center battery, and my battery did most of the adjusting of fire, and it was a very uneconomical war. What I mean by that, you're firing a 100-pound shell out there, and you use three or four of them stumbling around to find the target. And you use men of a ghastly thing. In the Battle of the Bulls, I saw an American soldier that had died on his feet. He froze to bed. And it doesn't sound very impressive to you or to anybody else just to say it, that we lost 6,000 men there.
Is that in your unit or all together?
In the third army.